everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and I am on Capitol Hill. We are taping both sides of the aisle, and we have Senator Dan McKay on the right.
Hey, everybody. Good to have you.
And Shireen Gourvani on the left.
Hello, and hey, listeners. Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, sitting here on Capitol Hill to talk issues. Shireen, what do you think about this new studio we're in?
Okay, this new studio is great. I will say I've seen some material produced out of here that I think is highly questionable in terms of veracity. But in terms of a nice space and an opportunity to communicate with the public, I'm glad to see the investment in a space like this so that people can share ideas, talk about what's happening on Capitol Hill. I haven't seen it used a ton, but I'm guessing that there's a podcast somewhere. I know that there's stuff on social media.
Yeah, everybody, just bear with Shireen for a minute. I mean, she is, I will just say I feel bad for my friend because I know that you like are grinning and bearing through a bunch of things that you're not happy about politically. But it says a lot about you that you're still like, okay, let's talk about it.
And yeah, I think that's great. Let's talk about it.
Okay, so we're going to start with what's happened with President Trump's inaugural. We now have President Trump. One of the first things he did was withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, but he didn't stop there. He signed orders to open the Alaska Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, ANWR, as we like to say. Yes. He lifted a pause on liquefied natural gas exports. He pledged to streamline permitting for energy and mining projects, and he revoked a Biden-era goal of transitioning to electric vehicles. Shireen, that's got to be enough to blow your top off.
You know, those are distressing to me, but I would actually add a couple that are more concerning. I think overturning Biden's efforts to lower prescription drug costs for Americans hurts all people. I think that's bad. Protections for worker safety, I'm concerned about that. Actually promoting access to voting feels sort of really on the nose for the moment that we're in. And I'm concerned about that. But I'm also concerned about some of the other things that I saw, like overturning banning chokeholds and no-knock warrants. Like, these are things that we know actually can be dangerous for people. Like, it can be dangerous for law enforcement or dangerous for folks. It's not best practice. These are really concerning, and I feel like they're particularly targeted and vindictive.
Yeah, Dan, any two or three of these would be news for a whole week, and we've got dozens and dozens of these.
When you sign 1,500 executive orders, basically, when Congress does what it does, which is it abdicates a lot of its responsibilities now to the executive branch, you've got these things where you've got dramatic swings in policy based on who's in charge. And this is not good for the country. I get it. Biden comes in, he does his thing, and he had several orders. President Obama, same thing. It's like this thing. It's like this never-ending executive troll of the American people where they are whipsawed back and forth, and they don't have predictable government, which is what the Constitution promised them. So I can understand those desires. It would be better if Congress had acted and dealt with these issues so they were the law of the land instead of relying on temporary executive orders. But it doesn't seem like that's the MO of DC anymore.
Whipsaw is a good word. The quote that Trump had where he said, this is in regards to energy, the United States will not sabotage our own industries while China pollutes with impunity. Dan, I think he's got a point there.
He absolutely does. And that's the one thing I thought is lost in some of the hyperbole of what happened, the day of inauguration, is we have, if people continue to buy from China, which is the interesting part of many in the climate accord, if you go through and look at their import export and their deficit with China, at the end of the day, many in the climate accord have moved on from buying things in the US to buying things from China. And so while it's great, everybody wants to be part of the climate accord and make these things, positive changes for the environment, that's all great stuff, right? But if you look at the other side of it and say, you can't say you're going to make some changes to your economy and all you do is change your buying habits to people who are polluting and doing irresponsible activities.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think the answer is for us to just pollute more, right? So I think there has to be an approach to this that fundamentally acknowledges the impacts of climate change. I'm sure you saw 10 inches of snow in New Orleans. Like, we're seeing the extreme effects of climate, and we know that there's a huge cost that comes back to Americans, huge devastation, loss of homes. Think of the wildfires we just saw, and on and on. So there has to be some way that people are brought to the table, and that we're working collectively towards a future where we have a livable planet and we're exploring. I can be convinced on the notion that we have to consider all of the above when it comes to energy policies. I also believe that there has to be agreement that there needs to be a planet that we can find habitable.
Politicians are scaring us with losing our planet, Shireen. Let's just focus on data-centered type of solutions.
I love that notion. Let's talk about the billions of dollars.
The tech at the end of the day that is our technological improvements as a country. We are moving forward in a way that is more responsible than just ending things artificially with government mandates.
Yeah. Sure, the billions of dollars that we're talking about in terms of impacts of hurricanes in Florida, in Texas, thinking about the extreme weather that we're seeing around the world, I'm just saying there has to be a balance to this that allows us to consider both sides of this equation.
So I learned early in my political science career that politics makes for strange bedfellows, and a lot of people took note that at the inauguration, CEOs of several tech giants were in prime seating positions. This is Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Tim Cook with Apple, Google, Sundar Pichai. I mean, wow.
Yeah. You can really buy your way to the good seats. It's like a Taylor Swift concert.
It's going to be interesting to see how long this lasts, this sort of marriage between tech and Trump.
Well, there are already some problems bubbling up, I think, in particular around immigration, when we're seeing a real push towards deportation, towards limiting immigration into this country. And frankly, Elon Musk coming out and saying that there are skills that we need. We need people to come into this country to fill roles in businesses that he runs. So that tension's already bubbling up.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see where it goes.
Dan, I saw the news report that the Trump administration will allow ICE raids at churches. Mm. That kind of unsettled me a bit.
That policy is far from being over. I was just going to comment really quickly, the strange bedfellows, right? Mm-hmm. In 2020, all of the, quote, flat-brim tech bros were like all over the Biden administration in the very beginning. And it's just amazing to see that flip. Right.
Yeah.
And like you said, so I'm interested to see that, the immigration policies, what actually happens versus what is authorized, that there's always a delta. Right.
Yeah.
You saw this. It's interesting that people thought it was a terrible idea, but it was OK to raid churches during COVID, but not for immigration issues. OK, mm-hmm. So I'm just going to say, let's stay out of churches as much as we mm-hmm. can and should from a government standpoint. And at the same point, we've got to be able to enforce our laws.
Dan, what did you think of President Trump withdrawing from the World Health Organization?
Long overdue,
Shireen. Yep.
Couldn't disagree more.
I can't imagine what bad news that was for them.
Yeah.
The financial part of it, the world superpower part of it.
Well, and when we think about things like COVID, whatever your beliefs may be about how that started, when we have robust infrastructure that invests in tracking communicable diseases, mm-hmm. when we think about the work that happens on HIV/AIDS prevention around the world, when we think about the impact that has on really all sorts of childhood illnesses, I find it cruel and unusual, but I think that's probably just one of many things I can put on that list that this administration will advance. I'll just add to it, like also with it back to the ICE raids, I think ICE raids in churches, of course, I think is, deeply concerning. And also in hospitals, when we think about what healthcare providers are trying to do, and just understanding how many people will be kept out of systems, kept out of healthcare that they need because they're afraid.
But these are the same organizations who are constantly saying the U.S. is not doing X, Y, or Z, and shaming for whatever purpose or policy it wants to come up with, whatever the topic du jour of the day is. And at the end of the day, they've become these progressive outlets. They're not necessarily focusing on health as much as they were.
Well, maybe
and
we
so
should.
That derivation and their mission is really, I think, what President Trump is trying to correct. My gut says you have a 1-year requirement in the WHO mm-hmm. agreement for withdrawal. My gut says that this is a good opportunity for the president to reset their expectations.
I just would say back to your earlier point, why don't we follow the data? Let's understand what good research tells us about investment in global health and maybe use that as the guide.
Those are all great, as long as we're investing in health. It's the other stuff that WHO gets involved in that they don't belong in.
Yeah. So another rule of sort of public policy, this is more in the public policy communications, is to spread out the good news.
Yeah.
And instead, President Trump has done another thing which you do in public policy, shock and awe.
Shock and awe.
Yeah.
This has been big time shock and awe. And I mean, how about the signing of changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America and changing Mount Denali to Mount McKinley? This is whipsawing.
Yeah, politically popular, positions, I guess, for Trump base. More entertaining than anything else. I don't think anything else comes of those. And I think at the end of the day, those are not executive orders that withstand a more than 4-year term of another
president. I hate it that, I mean, I just think when you do something like that, you ought to be caring about what locals think.
Yeah.
And my understanding is Alaska's not liking this.
Yeah.
Now let's go and spend defense dollars on who actually defends the Gulf of quote Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
It is not any other organization than the United States military securing the Gulf of Mexico. And mm-hmm. so at the end of the day, I can see president's perspective.
I'll say, I think this is a distraction. I would, even just point to, I would say kind of the left online being more outraged about suddenly following, the vice president on Instagram, not realizing it probably was a changeover account from Kamala Harris now to JD Vance. It feels like there's more outrage about things like this. And I do think that this is disrespectful. I don't think that was done correctly, but as opposed to focusing on things like the president ending birthright citizenship, changing thousands of offices that were a career to appointed in our federal government, many of these changes that are going to have devastating and long-term impacts on good governance and good government and people being in roles that are really committed to a cause.
Yeah.
America elected a leader that and said, we want change. I mean, regardless of how
you think they
want
to pay more for prescription drugs. I mean,
I think they want it to be done differently than it is currently being done. Executive order for prescription drugs is not the right way to do policy. Yeah. Period.
Hey, let's take a brief break. There's so much more to talk about, but let's take a break for our listeners. Shereen Gourbani, Natalie Gochner, and Senator Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we've got more news coming out of Washington to go through. And we're going to start out this segment by talking about the pardon that was extended to 1,500 Capitol rioters, including the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. Dan, let's start with you. Just get your take on this.
Yeah. I look at the pardons, I guess, maybe in mass, as opposed to getting so specific about some of these, because some of these, some of the drug charges, some of the other things, the guy, Silken Roads, the Bitcoin, dark web drug mm-hmm. trafficking, that kind of stuff. If you get above it macro, the thing I like actually about the pardons, and it may become a presidential tradition, interestingly, a lot of people have now been pardoned that the Republican Congress would have been distracted for the next 2 years mm-hmm. investigating and talking about and making points about on press and that kind of stuff. And they are not going to have those committees. That's one.
Yeah.
And two.
Well, and can I just say on that one? I mean, the pardon above all else has no recourse, right? I mean, it is final.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you want to know number two that's going to be really interesting? And this is why I think it's a double-edged sword for President Biden. Now, all of those people cannot claim to plead the Fifth Amendment because they've already admitted their guilt and they're excused from their crimes. Now it could be this open era of transparency because they don't have the protections of the Fifth Amendment, but they also aren't burdened by the Fifth Amendment or their own criminal background. Mm. So this could be a wide open chapter for transparency.
I'll just say, if you haven't read the ProPublica article called The Militia and the Mole that focuses largely on militia organizing here in Utah, I think we should be concerned. I think we should be concerned about the way that people are becoming militarized, that they're operating in these shadow organizations. And I'm concerned about the level of violence and, frankly, access to weaponry that's in our own community. I guess on this, I would just say if we can't, I just struggle with this president telling us that this is a law and order regime.
Mm-hmm. When you do that.
And just feeling like the blanketness of it just feels, quite disjointed.
Yeah, I want to be critical of both of these presidents for the pardons that they've given. Yes, it's an amazing power, but it needs to be done judiciously, and I worry that
it's gotten sloppy.
Yeah,
gotten but so has too broad. I will say this, and you know, I'm critical. Congressman Chaffetz could not give an interview back in the day without saying server Benghazi, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. Hillary. Like yeah. there was never a time that went by, right? Mm-hmm. Because Republicans were constantly prosecuting the past and going after, right? Same thing during the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. Trump, Trump, Trump. You could not hear it without saying Trump.
And or
Trump
Hunter is, Biden.
Or Hunter Biden.
Right,
like,
let's be honest.
Republicans
yeah,
on that
both
side.
Sides,
so
for sure.
I'd say at the end of the day, the one thing, I'm not like, I don't love the pardon power being used this way, but if it's going to be used and we can get transparency out of it and get Congress to focus on freaking doing the
yeah,
job.
Focus on the future.
I'm in.
Yeah. Okay, one more. Vivek Ramaswamy. Boy, he didn't last long, Shireen,
he
in the Dodge movement.
I think it's Doge. Yeah.
Doge.
He's
but,
out.
But he's headed to run for governor of Ohio.
Of Ohio.
And what do you know about that? Who would he be running against? What are the dynamics here?
So I'm actually not sure what the landscape is.
Do you know that, Dan?
But we have a termed out governor, correct?
Yes, that's right. So okay. They've got a term limited governor, so it's going to be an open seat, and you've got Vivek, who's already making ramifications, and there's a few others, you know, people that are like, you know, interested in doing the job. It'll be a super interesting side story to what's going on, because it's 2 years from now is yeah. the Ohio governor's
yeah,
race,
yeah.
and how will that lead into the president, because Ohio is a swing state, and it has been. But traditionally, swing states swing back a little bit during off presidential years. And so now we're going to see, like, does the Trump momentum carry through for two more years mm-hmm. so that Vivek can, you know, follow in that path?
Yeah. It'll
get
be
ready.
Interesting.
Yeah, get ready. I said I was going to finish with that, but we've got to talk about Elon Musk doing his Nazi salute.
Yeah.
Did you see that live? Because I did see that live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just home cooking lunch and, you know, it's the rally.
Give me your take on it because
well,
I'm guessing
it,
listeners
it
can guess mine.
Completely spontaneous to me and incredibly awkward. I mean, I think the guy is awkward.
Yeah.
I don't think of it as a Nazi salute as much as I think of as just his enthusiasm and his awkwardness.
Okay.
But maybe I'm being generous.
I think that's generous. Dan, what about you?
Wait, you think that's generous? Okay.
What do you think it was, Dan? I mean,
I'd
did
actually
you see
really,
it? I
I'd
mean,
like
it
to
was,
skip.
Yeah. When I saw it, I'm just like, this looks like a parody.
So I look at it and, you know, you've got, you know, if you go out on Twitter, you can find all these photos of here's
Dan
AOC.
Showing us a picture of AOC
here's,
doing
here's
it.
Here's AOC, but Pelosi has one. Schumer has one. Biden has one. Kamala Harris has one. They're all doing a very similar motion because when you're standing on a stage and you're waving to people doing stuff, if you take one photo of it or whatever,
I know,
it
but
can look.
This
I just
was,
look
not,
it.
This was
that,
not that.
I'm
I have
not,
to tell
I'm just
you.
Telling you, this didn't. That's what it felt like.
Did
to
you
me.
See it live?
I didn't see it live.
He's
I only watched
speaking,
the video afterwards.
He's got all this enthusiasm. It's a golden age, and then he just
stops
like,
and does it.
I am so excited, you know.
Yeah.
And he puts his hand up. And
yeah, but it's
it looks like a salute.
You're talking about a guy who is admitted to having borderline autism, and it's not like don't look to Elon Musk for social cues about presidential
that's
policy.
Fair enough.
Okay, then we should also not look to his platforms for understanding our political moment.
I yeah. love his platform.
All right.
I
so now locally, we have Governor Cox, an attorney, a bright guy who's acknowledging that a lot of these executive orders appear unconstitutional. Dan, we'll go to you first, just as the attorney, and then Shireen, you can comment on that. But this is both on the TikTok and birthright citizenship.
Well, we're concerned about the TikTok one just because we wanted to see some actual like follow through on the policy. And, mm-hmm. and D.C. followed Utah's lead and passed a bipartisan bill and said
the right
we
way
need to
through
do something
Congress.
About this. We yeah. have many articles that show that TikTok itself is specifically leading to content or leading, you know, young people to content that would not be something their parents would want them to see, whether it's self-harm, it could be pornography, like go down the list, all this stuff. And using algorithms to then manipulate thought is dangerous. And so, you know, and then having it in the hands of one of your enemies potentially isn't a great idea either. So, you know, that I can see that. But this gets back to my original point. We are using executive orders mm-hmm. to do congressional work, and we just are not, as a society, we should be frustrated that not that there's so much excitement that these executive orders, but just that they exist at all or are being used as tools yeah. for policy.
Yeah, Shireen.
I'll just say some of the things that you mentioned about concerns around TikTok to me feel just like almost laughable considering the amount of closeness and power that we have for Elon Musk, the platform that he has that is absolutely prioritizing right-wing agenda items and folks. And I get that a lot of people on the left have left that platform. But when you think about the access to pornography, when you think about the access to really harmful information for children, that's happening on X as well. Now, that person's sitting in our White House. I think that all of this is messy, and I don't think that we have a sophisticated approach to understanding how we keep people safe in terms of content.
The American people are tired. I just keep coming back to this, and I will just keep harping on it. The American people are tired of business as usual. They are just tired of it.
They voted for this.
They voted
I can accept
this,
that.
Right? Like Washington is broken and they're sick of it.
And people know in Washington, including the president, the people around him, that you get 18 to 24 months to make change and then it's gone.
Yeah. I'll also just say I enjoy our governor pointing out that something, I don't think that's constitutional. I can think of a few other things that are unconstitutional that I would love to hear him speak out on. But you know what? We'll take it and I can get it.
Shireen, Representative Celeste Malloy, she's doing something I'm super excited about. She wants to put some limits on the Antiquities Act that allows presidents to come in and set aside large quantities of land as a national monument.
So this is the theme of the show. I mean, Dan, this is exactly what you're talking about, right? When we cannot see action from Congress, when we saw the last Republican-led House was the least effective in terms of passing any legislation, getting anything done in history, I think we should, and frankly, I kind of think we should maybe expect more of that. There's even more razor-thin margin this time. Certainly the Senate has more power, but this is what happens when we, I think, continue to fail to put people in leadership that are tied to communities that are advancing what people want. So I would agree with you. The system's broken. I'm not in love with this, but I also think that it's reflective of a larger problem.
Congresswoman Malloy knows public lands. I know that about her, and I'm so excited to watch her leadership there.
And believe it or not, because of how she has managed her relationships with the federal government, both at the staff level and with the congressional level, because she's been so effective that way and has those deep roots, I'm telling you, she is going to be one of our most effective congresspeople.
Yeah. Okay.
I like Celeste a lot.
Dan, you're in the Senate. Senate President Stuart Adams gave his address Tuesday morning of this week. In it, he made a comment about energy. He's very caught up in this. We can take this a couple of different directions, but I thought it was so interesting that Governor Cox says we got to double the amount of energy produced in this state. Mm-hmm. And now we've got the Senate president saying we got to triple the amount of energy produced in this state.
Well, I'm going to say right now we got to quadruple.
Okay.
Just so that we feel like everybody is hyperboling their way into a corner.
Yeah. Give us a flavor for why there's so much talk about energy production right now.
We have seen, and Natalie could give us lectures and it would actually sound intelligent. I'll just, summarize it.
Run your mouth.
Yeah, I'll just run my mouth.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, great
go
job.
Ahead.
I like that. So,
fist bump.
I'll just say we've grown faster than we thought we were going to. We're growing even faster and we have even greater demand in the state of Utah. And so it's, go ahead.
I have to jump on you there. We're not growing faster than we projected and our growth is slowing. And I mean it over a decade or more. I mean, we used to grow at 3%. We're growing at 1.8.
Yeah.
It's just that you hit tipping points in growth.
Okay.
And in energy production, I'm going population there, but in energy, demand.
Yeah.
Because of AI and electrification
of
the grid. Sorry to jump in.
No. And I say
it's not population growth so much that's doing this. It's technological change that's sucking energy.
I think that's great. That will not be the first time nor the last time I will be wrong and Natalie will correct me. So this is just the first time in a
while.
We're
good friends.
So, but I can say that difference in demand for energy change, right? Or in energy demand is a big deal in how we are manufacturing, how we're doing, everything's changing that way.
Shireen, I tell people this is what I know to be the best of Utah, and that is that we plan and we look around corners. And this, to me, is legislators seeing the future and recognizing that we've got to look after the energy that propels our economy.
Yeah. And I just would hope that while we're doing that, we're thinking about ways to be responsible to our broader environment as well. When we think about the impact on a draining Salt Lake, the impact that we're seeing on our ski slopes, on our water in general, all of these issues, I think, deserve to be in the conversation.
Yeah. Dan, what are you hearing? We had just a couple minutes. What are you hearing about higher education budget cuts?
I know a lot of people want to know more. I think right now we're looking for reallocations and trying to make sure that we're aligning with our workforce and the demands of our future employments. And I think that's really what you see with higher ed stuff right now.
And I think that's incredibly productive to think about it as reallocation. In other words, reprioritization, trying to spend your money wisely. And I'm in higher ed, but I do support that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just quickly throw in a couple of things that I'm tracking, which would be efforts again to
I wish you guys
undermine.
Could see Shireen control herself. She really is awesome.
I tell my friends, I grip the table. I'm really concerned about things that we're seeing around trying again to end collective bargaining. I'm also concerned about, I think you might be heading off to this just after our conversation today, but efforts to further meddle with the ballot initiative process. Utahns were not thrilled about Amendment D, which was meant to be on our ballot before. Now we're seeing this issue bubble up again, and I think that you should anticipate, listeners, seeing this body try to move the threshold for ballot initiatives to 60% so we can have rule by the minority.
Which matches states like Nevada, you know, crazy right-wing Nevada, and, you know, other states who, at the end of the day, they're just trying to make sure mob rule isn't what controls policy.
Yeah, I don't think 50 plus one is mob rule, but I'll also just say what we do have, and I hope that you would agree with this, I think we could go back to January 6th and find one, but the issue that I would say we have here is a very complicated process to put something on the ballot that's much more rigorous than Nevada and other states.
Shireen, it's only fair that we give you the last word, so thank you for that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Anthony Scoma produces the program. We'll see you next week.